Welcome to the Sailor Noob Podcast, where a superfan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host, Caliban, and I'm ready for a Mirakulu Romantsu.
Oh, me too. I'm so glad you're here with me. And we're a couple of magical people ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Noob is brought to you by Crazy Larry's Scythe Emporium.
Whoa!
Tender wheat or tender flesh, we've got what you need for Woo! All your scything needs.
Ding-ling-ling-ling-ling-ling-ling-ling. People think I'm crazy, but I'm really crazy. It's not a joke.
Crazy Larry's Come get these Scythe sides. Emporium. People are dying to get them.
Oh, God. People of the current generation, you know, the vibrant one, don't remember the old crazy used car salesman commercials of the past.
I know.
Or do they? Because they don't exist anymore.
I don't know that they do.
I mean, they're just YouTube videos now, right?
Yeah. I mean,
every once in a while you get a real good car ad or like a boat dealership or a political ad where it's just some guy with a pocket protector and he's like, you know, you don't think that I mean it, but I mean it. These prices are really cheap.
Yeah.
Come check it out. And then he gets his nephew or something to edit it together in Final Cut. And then you send that off.
Right. To,
I don't know. I don't even know where they go anymore.
I know. But maybe we should get back on track and
This is a meandering way to get back on track.
I'm going to meander us back on track.
If you would think to possibly want to maybe consider to be ready to prepare to get back on track.
To talk about Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
So today we are talking about episode number 75. Nazo no Shinsenshi, Seira Pluto Tojo. In Japanese, the mysterious new guardian, Sailor Pluto, appears. The English translation and the English title, The Secret of the Lunosphere.
The Secret of the Lunosphere.
Yeah.
So, like, is the moon is an egg and it's going to crack open? And...
Yeah, I don't know. I was reading, apparently, Lunapi, I didn't remember this, in the Deke dub was called Lunabot.
Lunabot 5000.
Yeah, right.
Ready to do something weird.
Yeah.
Transform.
Right.
Into a complicated item.
But then, like, when Cloverway came around and they did Sailor Moon, the dub for Sailor Moon S and Super S, then it was Luna P in the English version as well.
Okay.
So.
Well, good. They got that straightened out.
Yeah, they did.
You have to straighten things out sometimes.
I was out
wearing a Sailor Moon t-shirt the other day.
Yes.
And it was, people have probably seen this. It's a circular design and then it's, nighttime and it's a silhouette of Sailor Moon.
Yes.
On it. And I was at a restaurant and the host was like, whoa, cool shirt. Mewtwo, right? And I don't want to be a jerk, but sometimes, you know, especially living in the city, you want to like de-escalate or bring encounters to an end. But I was like, he seemed friendly. I was like, it's a Sailor Moon, actually.
Uh-huh.
But then I looked at it when I got home, and I was like, oh, that's totally Mewtwo.
Well, it's got the
Mewtwo
his
also
tail.
Has a waspish waist and full hips. And then he's got like, I don't know anything about Mewtwo. He's got like tentacles or ears or flippy somethings.
He's it got looks a kinda long like, flippy tail.
Yeah, it looks kind of like her flippy hair things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, I was going to go back and be like, yeah, all right, man. Sorry, I assumed that you were a nut.
Sailor Moon has turned into a Pokemon.
You had a t-shirt thing encounter yourself, didn't you?
I did, actually. I was wearing new t-shirt, my Sailor Moon t-shirt that was actually from Target, one of the many tie-dye Sailor Moon shirts out there.
Kids today don't remember.
Yeah, right. And it's Sailor Moon from Sailor Stars. Her outfit from that. And I got a couple of compliments on it. And, like, I'm out in Sailor Moon stuff all the time, and nobody says boo. And, like, I had somebody at a store be all like, oh, I like your shirt, you know, and like, ask if I'd seen the Eternal movie yet. And at that point, or movies, I should say, and at that point, I hadn't gotten a chance to. But yeah. But she was like...
So the conversation ended right there.
Yeah, right.
No.
No, it didn't. Walked away. And then we were picking up food somewhere, and somebody else complimented my shirt. So I got a twofer, like, within, like, you know, half an hour of each other. Yes. It was very strange.
And nobody said a word about your Sailor Moon mask.
No, they did not. You are absolutely, yes.
So everybody's looking at your chest for some reason. Well, I wanted to mention that we have a new Patreon. Patron.
Gosh. On Patreon.
Yes.
Yes.
If it happened more often, I'd have it done. But no, we have a new patron at the $5 In Your Senshi level by the name of June. June, welcome to the team.
Thank you, June.
I like June. It's a good name.
It is a good name. Yeah.
It's mythological. Of course.
Like Juno?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Queen of the gods.
That seems to fit.
Sure.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
You don't see it in other places very much, though.
No. Not
Chameleon
really.
Chameleon June is a character in Saint Seiya.
Okay.
And Osborne, I think, is the main character's name on Handmaid's Tale.
Oh. Okay. Wow. Is that what it is in the book? It's been so long.
No, there is no name in the book.
Oh.
They just had to give her a name because
it's a TV show. Seasons. Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
So who do you play, Elizabeth Moss? I play... Oh, I'm going to listen. And of course, that famous Beatles song. But anyway, welcome to the club, June. And if anybody else is interested in joining us for extra content on our Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/SailorNoob, all one word, and join us at either the $1 or the $5 level. And to sweeten the deal a little bit, I think it's time for us to announce that soon, I don't know, compared to this show, where we're at, how they line up, but... in a week or two, I guess, we are switching from our animetification show where we watch a random anime and talk about it on
pilot.
The Patreon.
Yeah. Yes.
To watching the live action television show, Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
Yes, PGSM. I'm excited.
Really looking forward to this. Yeah. I've seen bits and pieces, little snatches of it. But I'm excited to be a brand new noob. In a whole nother universe.
I'm going to be a noob at this, too. So.
Oh, really?
It's pretty exciting.
Double noobs. Pretty Guardian Sailor Noobs.
Yes.
In this case.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're on the fence about joining us at the $5 level, become an Inner Senshi today and listen to us marvel at the stuffed cat TV budget awesomeness of Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
I don't know. I'm really looking forward to it because I know it's like we've talked about on animatification. It is like the Dark Kingdom arc, but I don't know if I said this, but it's different, like from the manga. But it's different. They add things. They elaborate on things. There are things that are in this show that are not in any other form of Sailor Moon.
They find ways to shoot in empty public forums that don't cost anything to.
Yeah.
Let's fight on this baseball field. Oh, we must stop. We must stop the Dark Kingdom. They want to take over this mall concourse.
No.
This food court.
Let's fight in the lobby of this theater.
Yeah, right.
That there's no show going on right now. Or perhaps the roof of this building.
Yeah. Well, this orchestra practice room is full of evil. Yeah. So, still looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. Well, I am also excited to hear your recap of this episode.
Oh, well, here it is.
All right.
We open on Chibiusa running for her life in a completely black void.
Yeah.
She's being chased by a dark crystal. Not the Jim Henson one. But honestly, it looks kind of like it.
It does.
Chibi seems pretty terrified. The crystal is getting closer, and suddenly in front of her emerges a dark, cloaked figure wielding a scythe and blocking her path. The masked figure says, "I've come for you, rabbit." But Chibi says, "I don't know you. Who are you?" To which the figure responds, "You know that better than anyone else." I hope these two work it out because I have no idea what's going on.
I know, right?
And as the cloak opens it shows the dark crystal floating in the void of space. It's very dreamlike.
Yes.
Because I think it's a dream.
Yeah.
He says, let's go to where your mom is. And Chibi gives us an awesome 50s horror scream, just like hands on the face. As she tumbles into the void. We see the silhouette of Crystal Tokyo as Chibi says, Mom, they're coming for me again. The evil black crystal people. As Crystal Tokyo explodes with light. She says, help me, Mom. Mama!
Oh, no.
We cut to the metal planet and the green goo city and the throne room of Prince Demando, the Thash Prince of Black Moon. Well, this is a story all about how the time stream got twisted upside down, and I'll pour a glass of wine. I'll just sit right here while you go and kill the rabbit and get her out of my hair.
Oh, my God. That was amazing.
Sticker?
Yes.
Sticker.
Did you do it all we'll get for to the it later. Sticker?
I do it all for the stickers. Upon the throne sits the prince with his customary glass of wine, and he's just kind of leaning. He's got his cheek on his hand.
He's kind of bored.
Is he drunk?
I don't know. I don't know if he...
Does he just sit around and kill wine all day?
Does he actually drink it, though?
Maybe everybody is here in the throne room for an intervention.
Yeah, right.
Although he says, without slurring, I guess, that the evil black crystal is emitting energy as if it was hunting.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I know, right?
As Murad is here, and she thinks, you're so amazing, Demando-senpai. Your words are like poetry. I don't like how simpy she is over him, but I don't know how invested I should get, since there's a high chance that she's going to be crushed by a chandelier or something in the next few episodes. The prince says, what do you think, Saphir? And we cut to a dude wearing white shoes, white slacks, driver's gloves, and a navy Nehru jacket with, like, metal brads or, like, little accents all over it,
I can't tell the breast. If they're metal or if they're, like, tiny crystals.
Or maybe crystals, yeah.
That's kind of what I've always
thought.
Maybe
they're pens. You can never have too many pens. He looks like the guy who drives the dinghy to Michael Jackson's yacht. Not the yacht captain.
Oh, my God.
Just an able seaman who's also a backup dancer. A backup sailor.
I like it.
Saphir says, what, are we still trying to invade the 20th century? And Esme says, well, with Rubaeus gone, I'm taking over, and I won't fail. And Demando says, you're too loud.
I know.
And she's like, oh, sorry. Saphir says, we don't need to go after the crystal or the rabbit. Our evil black crystal is invincible. And I feel like evil black crystal is a bit redundant. You have a black crystal. We get it's evil. Demando summons creepy wise guy, and an image of him appears. Wise guy says, actually, as long as the silver crystal exists, our crystal cannot be invincible. The silver crystal must be shattered.
Yeah.
At this, Demando actually gets up, so he can walk.
Yes.
He looks behind his throne where the evil black crystal pulses with energy, and he says, wherever the evil black crystal's energy spreads, our ambitions follow. So that's all set up.
Yeah.
At the Sakino household, all five of our girls, plus the cats, are gathered around Chibiusa's bedside. Chibi is asleep. She's tossing and turning fitfully. And Usagi wails, Chibiusa's gonna die! Rei tells her to calm down, but she says, I can't calm down! Even the doctor doesn't know what's causing this!
Yeah.
This being Chibi apparently trapped in a fitful sleep. Question. Once the doctor failed to determine why this girl was sleeping, did he just F off after that?
It kind of seems like it.
Oh, well, don't worry about my fee. Good luck with your dying kid.
Right.
Medical technology. This is nothing. Beyond. There's nothing we can do. So.
We can't give her a shot or
anything. I'm out of here. Let me know if it changes.
Yeah, right.
Chibi cries out in her sleep. Help me. Help me. The evil black crystal. Those people, they're coming. Help me, Pooh.
I need you, Pooh.
This will make sense in a second. Oh, wait. I think I know what's wrong. Get the doctor back here.
I know, right?
At this, Luna P's eyes begin to glow, and it floats up to hover over Chibi's body. It begins to glow gold all over. I knew this day would come. And it kind of turns into a crystal ball type thing, which shows an image of Sailor Pluto.
Yes.
I am no one suspicious, she says. I think we're the judge of that.
If you start off that way, on a bad foot.
But continue.
Yeah, right.
I guard the gateway of time and space. Luna says, Sailor Pluto. Yeah, that sounds familiar. Sure it does, Luna. Sure it does. You just got those script pages today and you know it. Pluto says, please help small lady, referring to Chibi. The evil black crystal is invading small lady's mind. The only way to save her is for you to enter the world inside of her mind. It says squint in my notes.
Yeah, you can't hear squint.
You're talking about dreams. Pluto says,
your spinning top.
Pluto says it will be very dangerous, but all the girls agree it's time that they save Chibi. Yes. Pluto raises her staff, and the girls and the cats awake in a ruined city at night. Usagi comments that the moon looks so big, and we pull back to see that this is probably Crystal Tokyo, or it was Crystal Tokyo, or it's an image of it in Chibi's mind.
Right.
Makoto says, This is a pretty dark future. Like, this is like Terminator level dark.
Uh-huh.
But Ray says, but this is just the image in Chibi's mind, so maybe it's not actually like this. That's a spirit kid. Usagi hears Chibi Usa cry out for her, Mama! And we cut to her crying and crouch down, saying that she's kawaii. I mean, she's kawaii, but she's kawaii right now.
She's
definitely
scared.
Kawaii.
Yeah,
The girls approach her and say, Chibi Usa! But Chibi says, my name is Small Lady. Usagi doesn't really get it, and she says, hey, it's us. But Chibi says, I don't know you. Usagi still doesn't get it, but Ami points out that this might be Chibi before she ever met them.
Yeah.
If the Avengers had had Chibi, they would have been fine. Because why not? We're in somebody's head. She's dreaming of a time before she went back to the past. It's kind of like when, you know, you're dreaming and you're in a strange building, but you're like, you know, it's your high school.
Right.
But like the opposite of that. Chibi says, what are you babbling about? And she runs off. She hides behind a wall and she thinks she's safe, but she looks up to see the masked and cloaked and scythed figure from her earlier dream.
Yep.
He says, let's continue our game of tag, rabbit. And he swipes at her with his scythe. The girls finally catch up and see this. They immediately transform into the Sailor Scouts, big five-way makeup. Chibi is staring down the scythe guy, who is not actually trying all that hard to kill her, it seems. He's definitely pausing for a second. But anyway, here's Sailor Moon saying, hold it! If you want to show up in somebody's mind, be more polite! She can scold anybody about anything.
I know!
The pretty sailor-suited soldier, Sailor Moon, Skinny Kawate Oshiyakyo, Cloaky. We'll call him Cloaky. Cloaky wastes no time by immediately throwing his scythe at the girls, who all leap out of the way. Burning Mandala, Venus Love Me Chain, both lance out at the cloaked figure, but they bounce off harmlessly. Cloaky laughs evilly at this and says, the rabbit knows the reason better than anyone. It's a lot of cryptic. He's just programmed for cryptic terms.
I know.
And words.
Does she? I don't know that she does.
I don't know. I don't know if we do. Ray says, Usagi! Get that baby out of here!
Yeah.
And tells Cloaky, we're your opponents now, as the sailors prepare to fight. Running away from there is Chibi Usa, who is met by Sailor Moon. She tells Chibi, we're here to help you. But Chibi says, what are you talking about? You're the ones that destroyed Crystal Tokyo. Your Dark Moon clan did this.
Mm-hmm.
And Usagi says, I guess Usagi's just like, no, point up, not pointed down. Right?
Yeah,
look at my forehead.
Right.
We're not their friends. We came here to protect you. You're going to time travel to the 20th century and become our friend. Chibi considers this, but she's like, what? Look, if you're that insistent, I guess I'll trust you, but you have to save my mom. Chibi leads Usagi to the Crystal Palace at the center of town, saying, my mom is sleeping inside. Usagi says, okay, and she's ready to walk in, but Chibi throws a rock that reveals an energy field like the one in the UFO last week. Chibi says, my mom says that the Black Moon Clan can control the power of the evil Black Crystal. If you're not going to help her, don't call yourself my friend. Sailor Moon thinks about this, but she's interrupted by the falling of a crystal skyscraper a couple blocks away. So apparently the battle's going really well.
Yeah, right.
Luna and Artemis run in and say that the sailor soldiers need help, and Usagi promises Chibi she'll help her mom before leaving her under the protection of Luna and Artie. Chibi thinks to herself, Sailor Moon, eh? Back at the battle, which is raging hard enough, at least to level a skyscraper, the sailors and Cloaky have fought to a standstill. Usagi arrives and tells everyone that Chibi's mom is in the palace. And Minako deducts that if they save her mom, they might cure her illness.
Yes.
See?
Yeah.
That's experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, none of this really matters. None of this is real. It's all about completing the scenario, right? Whatever form that takes.
What is the psychology to get us out of here?
What's the end of the game, you know? Like, what is it? What's the trigger?
Right.
That's the insight I expect from Sailor V.
Yes.
The girls decide that the way into the palace is through Cloakman, and they square up against him once more. Once again, he throws his scythe, but I guess they were distracted because all five girls go down.
I know.
And Usagi struggles to get up as Chibi and the cats arrive to see the scouts sprawled on the ground. Usagi dashes at the cloaked man and uses the moon scepter to attack, but she's thrown to the ground. Cloaky says, "So that's where you are, rabbit." Usagi throws herself in front of Chibi to protect her, but the cloaked man says, "Let's go back!" And he slams his scythe into the ground, creating a crevasse that widens towards Chibi and Usagi. Mm-hmm. Usagi leaps to grab Chibi and ends up holding her by one hand over the yawning abyss.
Yeah.
Chibi is floored that Usagi would help her, but Usagi says, "Of course I would. We're friends." And with every ounce of strength in her 88-pound body, she strains to haul Chibi up from the crack in the earth. Chibi says, "Just let me go." But Usagi says, "I can't do that. We came here to save you." Chibi seems touched by this, and we go into her mind again to see Pluto telling her that the sailor soldiers will surely save her.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like Inception. Check your totem, Chibi.
Yeah,
if the pancake isn't fluffy enough, you're still dreaming. Give her a kick. It's a weird movie. From there, we see Chibi talking to Tuxedo Hand. This is the scene where she asks, is Sailor Moon strong? And Sailor Moon says she's invincible from a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
Big question. Huge question.
Okay.
Is this Chibi's dream self, like, getting access to her actual memories about Sailor Moon?
I think so.
Because this Chibi,
that's how I take
by the
it.
Strict rules, hasn't met Tuxedo Hand yet, or Sailor Moon, or anybody.
I know.
Or has she? She is from the future.
I don't know.
Chibi comes back to reality, and Usagi has somehow managed to hold on to her throughout her entire reverie.
I know!
We were talking about chocolate. That was 10 minutes ago. Usagi says, "Open your heart to us and trust us, Chibi." It's a really nice moment.
It is.
Shattered by Cloaky, who is hefting his scythe behind Sailor Moon to bring it down on her head. He screams, "You're coming back with me!" And Chibi screams, "Kill him, Sailor Moon!" Cloaky brings his scythe down, but Sailor Moon blocks it with her scepter while still holding Chibi. And as she does, she begins to glow with a strange pink energy.
Yeah.
And with a shout, she blasts him back. Hear that? Is that my theme song? Sailor Moon stands up, and she's not holding Chibi. But no big deal, as Chibi comes floating up from the crevasse to land safely on the ground.
With, like, the aura of the pink power, I think.
Pink power.
Yeah. Emanating from Sailor Moon.
That's what Sailor Moon's all about.
Yeah, right.
Sailor Moon says, "Enough! I won't let you do what you want anymore. Moon Princess Halation!" She fires a moon beam that disintegrates Cloaky to reveal a dark crystal at his center, which itself disintegrates, and he's no more. And those little pieces disintegrate too. The barrier gone, Chibi leads the sailors into the palace, where they arrive at the chamber where Chibi's mom lies asleep in a crystal bed. That's uncomfortable.
Yes.
We don't want them as a sponsor. Crystal mattress. Chibi says, "Sailor Moon, arigato." And she runs in to see her mom as everything around them disappears and resolves into Chibi's room once more. From the Lunasphere, Pluto says, "Arigato, Sailor Moon. Chibi is okay now." Chibi wakes up and says, "I slept very well." "Oh, Pooh! Oh, I want to go home." But Pluto says, "You're not yet ready. And the enemy will appear again with a new plot to get you. Sailor soldiers, please look after her and the silver crystal." Mm-hmm. And the sphere turns back into Luna P. Chibiusa is in tears, but Usagi holds her and thinks, "I'll protect them. Chibiusa, the silver crystal, and the future to come." No pressure.
Yeah. But I feel like this episode shows her character growth a lot. Like, she comes off as very, Usagi comes off as very mature for the most part in this episode, and I feel like she's determined and, you know, she's going to protect Chibiusa and the Silver Crystal, like she said, in the future, and, you know, but, so.
I agree. I mean, it's a real big one for Usagi. It's real leader stuff that she's doing.
Yeah.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
What's the pink power? Is that Sailor Moon power, Or is that we're in Chibi's mind, so as long as Chibi, you know, they keep talking about, I don't know if it doesn't translate, but they keep talking about opening her heart, you know, trusting them, basically.
Yeah.
So if she's doing that, is she can control the dream, basically. Like, I'm not hanging off a cliff. I'm just in my mind.
That is a fantastic question that I do not know the answer to.
I'll have to put pink power on my coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sailor Moon can sometimes have an aura about her, but I feel like this is the first time we've, like, visually seen that.
It's the first
time
I've seen anything.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've seen Sailor Pluto, speaking of having power. So I want to defend myself a little bit, because I feel like 25 shows ago, I talked about Sailor Pluto and how I knew that Sailor Pluto had time powers. And we make fun of, like, you know, how transparent you are, but you must have done a good job, because I was totally disabused, wrongfully, of that. And then later on, about 10 shows ago, I said, oh, maybe Sailor Saturn has time powers, because Saturn, you know, a.k.a. Kronos, is the god of time.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it was just Sailor Pluto the whole time. So thanks for that.
I'm trying not to say anything.
No, you're doing your job right. And she's got green hair. Gotta have green hair.
Yeah, yeah. I love her look. I think she's really cool. I like Sailor Pluto a lot.
I don't know what to think about her, because she's the first sailor that we've met that doesn't have, you know, an alter ego that we know about. You know, she's not like a teenage schoolgirl or whatever.
Right.
And so she seems kind of, you know, she's very knowledgeable.
Yes.
Because she knows what's going to happen, I guess. She has these powers over time, and she's kind of mysterious.
She is. She's definitely mysterious.
Why doesn't she give them advice from the future?
I don't think she... Well, it doesn't explicitly say that she can't,
look in a history book and
maybe
go...
Maybe she can't.
Yeah. Thanks for warning us about the UFO. Great
yeah,
stuff.
Right. Well, yeah, I know.
They call you Pooh.
Yeah, well... And this is the first time we've seen her appear from Luna P too. So, like, in all those times that Chibiusa has been, like, visibly upset, and, you know, I mean, she talked to her before, but...
Right? But she's always just saying, like, "No, can't do anything."
I know, it's not reassuring.
Well, we've got McDonald's at home. We mentioned Inception a couple times already. It does feel like Inception. I mean, Christopher Nolan didn't invent the idea of going into somebody's mind or their dreams or whatever, but that's literally what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of, they use this, it's like a get out of jail free card. I think when we were watching it, I talked about, like, bottle episodes and TV. This isn't really a bottle episode, because... It would have to take place at the school or Usagi's house or the park, you know. Pre-existing sets is how a live-action bottle episode works. This is they go to a totally different, you know, universe or the future or whatever.
Right.
Even though they're in her mind. You know, your special effects budget doesn't know it's fake. So it's not really that, but it is a kind of a standalone info dump type episode, even though they're...
It is.
The dump truck opens, beep, beep, backs up, tilts, nothing comes out of it. Because we didn't learn anything.
Not really, except that it's the evil Black Crystal, apparently.
What I got out of this was that they kind of incepted her to trust them. Because the whole point is, I guess, back in the real world, even though she's seen that they're heroes, seen them do hero stuff, and has saved their lives, at her core, she doesn't really trust them still. And as we see in this dream,
if this is
a representation of Chibi before, like I mentioned before, like, she's scared, she's despairing because she wants her mom, but she's not really scared of this guy. She's, you know, got that Chibiusa kind of fire. She's staring things down, and she's showing bravery and beyond her years. Part of that is her self-reliance and her self-assuredness as a six-year-old. And so this, you can say in real life, Chibiusa, put those pancakes down. You have to trust us.
Right.
But it's almost like they, like in the movie Inception, kind of give her an idea and convince her that it's her idea. Do you know what I mean? They convince her dream self. They show her dream self that they're reliable.
That she needs to trust them.
Back in the real world,
she
trusts them now. And then also there's a dream robot?
Yeah, I don't understand how... I'm very confused as to how that works. I've read on a couple of wiki pages that Prince Demando sent the droid after.
Oh, so what you're telling me is nobody knows. So that's okay.
I don't think so. because I think they're just insinuating that, because he remarks like, oh, it seems like our crystal, it seems like it's hunting. Do you know it's hunting? So are you being clever? Are you not telling Esmeralda and Zephyr your plan?
You can't listen to a word he says.
What? I was just really confused, like, rewatching it. I had to, like...
My headcanon is that they put something, they put that in her in the future. They put that, like, in her brain or something like that. And so if she ever got away or something, maybe the evil Black Crystal can, you know, control that thing, the crystal in her through time or whatever to, like, kill her in her sleep.
Okay.
So she can't come back.
I read something that suggested that that Prince Demando activated it so she would be asleep until they could find her or something like that. But that is not in the show at all. And I think that is pure conjecture and somebody making a story up where there is no story.
Well, ours was better. it's like if they want to kill her, you know, not giving them ideas, but this is like New Tokyo.
Whoa.
Just drop a bomb on a Super Chupon. Like, they alternate between wanting to capture her and kill her. And I don't understand the difference yet.
I think they want to capture her to
and
kill
her. Yeah, but if you just kill her.
Then you don't have to capture
just
her.
Just set a fire.
Yeah.
you know what I mean?
I know.
Like, you know where her preschool is, right?
Right.
Boom.
Oh, okay. All right. That's like a plan. I don't like it.
Evil predator drone or something like that, right? Come on. This kind of reminds me of, I keep talking about the X-Men, but...
Go ahead.
There's, you know, Professor X would always fight people on the psychic plane, because of course his legs, he can't use his legs, and so physically he's not imposing, you know, compared to Wolverine or whatever, but then, you know, he's a Viking in the mental
world.
Oh,
yeah.
And so he'd always, like, you know, fight people in the psychic plane. Or there'd be like, Havoc is traumatized, so we're going to go to the house that's in his mind. There's a video game called Psychonauts that is by Double Fine Productions, and it's a really great game where you are a young psychic at a summer camp for psychics who are learning to help people by going into their brains and...
Whoa.
You know, attacking the creatures in their brains. It's funny that I hate Inside Out, but I like Psychonauts when neither of them really, like, are playing fair with, like, actual mental health problems.
Right.
But anyway.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, fiction's good, too. I mean, it doesn't have to all be depicted like how it is in real life.
And I don't have to like it all.
No. That would be boring. What do you think about, like, is this like Freddy Krueger? Like, I saw a site that suggested this is like Freddy Krueger.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Well, Freddie had already made his debut at this point.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Does Chibi get turned into a doll that gets pulled through a window at the end?
Yeah, right. He doesn't have, like, metal claws like Krueger, but he has long, red fingernails.
Yeah, he's had an ominous sort of look to him, too.
Yes.
There's no sex, because these are kids.
That would be weird.
Yeah, I'm not saying there should be.
This is a kid's show, so yeah, that'd be
weird.
You
know, the
but that is a big part of Krueger. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. The sort of horror movie aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I guess the one more thing that I would have to say is, it wasn't this episode necessarily. Maybe it was just the proverbial straw. But I'm turned around on Chibi now.
What does that mean?
It means that I secretly hated her this whole time.
Well, you talked about that a little bit last episode, that you were feeling like you weren't hating her so much.
You don't watch a show for most of your life because it's a girl show.
Yeah,
and then you watch it and you go, all the years I wasted not being a Sailor Moon fan. But you still, you know, you still hold preconceptions. And so a chibi version of the main character is going to join the cast of the show. And it's like, we're Urkelin' this bitch. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's going to ruin this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, she's a totally different character who has her own personality, her own conflicts within that personality. It's weird. The only weird thing is you accept, you know, that I can follow a 14-year-old hero because they're not adults, but they are facing not only monsters, but the trials of becoming an adult, of pre-adulthood. Mm-hmm. You have to apply that to a 6-year-old who really should just be in school and, like, you know, playing with blocks and stuff like that. Or a Nintendo Switch. I don't know.
Right.
So I guess if you can just get over that, seeing her, you know, face these problems with bravery and, you know, intelligence, but also have the enjoyable, exploitable characteristics of a child. You know, she wants pancakes. Give me some pancakes.
Yeah, right. And she's going to be a brat.
And, yeah, she's a brat. And I think, I don't know, like, I don't know what happens in the manga, but, like, I think that the creators knew that because of the way they introduced her. She was introduced in a very unorthodox way, mm-hmm. and having her, what could we do? This kid pulls a gun. Do you know what I mean? I think it signals right away that this is not going to be what you think it is. It's not going to be, you know, the snarf of the, I guess you'll have to, everybody's going to have to look that up, but that's okay.
What
is that? Well, we'll go back to the Urkel or Robo-Urkel.
Or Stefan, who was the good-looking version of Urkel.
You got me there. Yeah.
I watched Family Matters.
It's called The Nutty Professor. Yeah. I've seen it before.
Yeah.
Look that up.
Yeah. So, I mean, the manga, you know, obviously it differs a little bit, but when Chibiusa is...
Oh, here we go with manga talk with Mika and
Hana. I won't do it that much. When Chibiusa is introduced, it happens more or less the same way. She lands on Usagi's head.
Well, she has a knife, though.
Yeah, no. And she, like... points a gun at her. That's all Nako Takeuchi. I think she didn't want her to be, similar maybe in some ways, but not a complete copy by any means.
Sure.
I want to also say that you're not alone in not liking Chibiusa. There are
many. But I do like her.
I know you like her now. But there are many fans who don't like her largely because of how mean she is to Usagi in the very beginning.
And plus, you know, it's like a child. It's like a family. You know, you're the kid. The parents have another baby. You're jealous of the baby.
Yeah.
Like, you know, right. I'm this is Usagi's show. We don't need this other kid in here. But if we can, even at this point, and again, I make the point about them being kids. If they're just going to be kids and the series is going to end and they're still kids, mm-hmm. we're never really going to see them grow. I know there's like a cursed child non-canon short story where they're adults or whatever, but like we're never really going to see them grow. But if we just kind of pretend or we use like an equivalent of now this is a child, you know, a younger sister or a daughter figure that she needs to become responsible and protect, we get those beats still without having to follow Usagi throughout her entire life. Although, like I said, I would totally watch, you know, Sailor Woman.
Oh, me too. And like,
but not the Powerpuff Girl version.
No. And I mean, there are a lot of fans who want Nako Takeuchi to write more manga, but I think.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, I've seen a lot of people's responses on that. It was a very grueling process.
Oh, boo hoo.
It was seriously, like, the life of a mangaka is.
But she's a star.
I know.
And I don't know, like, what ownership, if any, she still has, like, what percentage of these characters. Oh, maybe that's the problem. Maybe she's like, I don't need to work. I can just cash these Netflix checks. Mm-hmm. But if she returned, it would immediately be a gigantic success.
I agree.
And she could go at her own pace, and it would be,
well,
you know, money makes
if she
makes
could go at her own pace, maybe she would do it. Yeah, I don't know.
Money, you know, that's what all the hard work's for.
Yeah.
And appreciation.
But she is... I can't remember his name right now, but she's married to a famous mangaka as well.
Ooh, what a good piece of information we don't have. So this is the sticker that I pulled.
Oh, it is very
extremely
nice.
Extremely fitting.
It is a Princess Serenity.
Yes.
And she is swirling around in her lovely dress.
She's doing a big, she must have jumped up or been fired out of a cannon because she's not touching the ground. But her skirt is trailing down instead of around her face. So, yes.
Yeah.
Or perhaps she's using the power of flight, which I don't know that she has.
Yes.
Sailor Moon! Backtracking is back for an all-new season. Hi, I'm Caliban.
And I'm Gooey Fame.
And we'd like to introduce you to Backtracking, the podcast that explores the real-world inspirations behind your favorite episodes of Star Trek.
From historical events to classical literature to blockbuster films, we go where no pod has gone before to seek out the origins of classic Trek tales.
Did you know, Gooey, that the TNG episode Too Short a Season was an allegory for the Iran-Contra affair?
Yeah, only sweatier. Did you know that the Enterprise episode Regeneration was an homage to the John Carpenter film The Thing?
Archer and T'Pol freezing to death over a bottle of whiskey would have been a controversial ending.
As a dog lover, Archer would not like The Thing, I'm guessing.
Oh my god, movie night is canceled. Join us every other Thursday for a journey back to the beginnings of the Trek universe.
Backtracking is available wherever you get your podcasts.
No, Porthos!
Kyoro Kyoro Miru, or Curiously Looking Around, where we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode. In honor of the introduction of Sailor Pluto in this episode, we are going to talk about astronomy in Japan.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Not astrology.
Not astrology.
That would just be the Chinese zodiac.
Largely, yes.
Okay.
But
astronomy.
Yes, astronomy.
Astronomy you. Let's all astron for a change.
Right. But this is a challenging subject to research, as there's not a lot of information readily available.
They know about stars, right?
Well, yeah, of course they know about stars, but, you know, like, sometimes you're like, okay, well, I want to talk about skiing in Japan. Let's look at the history of skiing in Japan, and, like, I can tell you when skiing came to Japan.
Mr.
And,
skiing. We all know.
Right,
we all
exactly.
know the story.
We know all know this. Well, the same cannot necessarily be said about astronomy, and there's a lot of scientific papers and whatnot, but anyways, numerous astronomers in Japan have asked if the ancient Japanese were not intrigued by the stars. This expresses the fact that compared with Western cultures, it is quite challenging to find ancient star mythology and records of scientific or pre-scientific development. It is regarded as general knowledge that there is no constellation mythology in Japan.
Huh.
This idea comes from the fact that there are barely any words about stars in the sky in Japanese mythology, as mentioned in the Kojiki and the Nihon Shoki. And those are the two ancient texts that have depict a lot of their mythology and stories and that sort of thing.
They're so thoughtful. They're so scientific. And they write everything down. And they keep everything that they write down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so strange that that's not...
Well, and they talk about, you know, writing came over from China at one point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it wasn't there right away, so we don't know how far back. But one of the explanations that is commonly given as to why Japanese mythology has only a smattering of references to stars is that, unlike nomads who relied on stars for directions while traveling, the ancient Japanese were largely farmers and were therefore not very interested in the stars. Maybe they thought they were pretty, but they didn't necessarily need
okay,
them
so
to
they
get
didn't
around.
Invent the sextant before everybody else, but yeah, they appreciate beauty so much.
They do. I know.
That's so strange.
It's very strange.
It's like they have a 180 degree blind spot above their heads.
Right above their heads. There was
like the cricketers.
The cricketers?
From Life, the Universe, and Everything, the third book in the Hitchhiker's Guide trilogy.
I don't remember them. I need to reread that. But there is one star that has been incredibly important throughout the history of Japan, and that is the sun.
Takeshi. Oh, the sun.
The sun, yeah. From the sun goddess Amaterasu, from which the emperor of Japan up until the end of World War II was literally thought to be a direct descendant of, to being called the land of the rising sun, and to their national flag, which also represents the sun and embodies their nickname.
But the sun is like barely like a star. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know it's a star, but...
I know it's a reach, but just go with me here.
It's not astronomy-wise, it's not a star.
I guess.
okay.
But as far
all right,
as...
I'll open my heart.
As mythology goes. So the The Kitora Tomb is an ancient burial mound, or kofun in Japanese, located in the village of Asuka in Nara Prefecture, Japan. The tomb is believed to have been constructed sometime between the 7th and 8th centuries, but was only discovered in 1983. The ceiling, and it has a lot of paintings in it. The ceiling of the tomb is adorned with a map of the night sky, which charts 68 constellations with stars depicted in gold leaf. Three concentric circles are sketched in red, displaying the movement of the celestial bodies, one of which is the sun. After studying this map for decades, Japanese researchers have come to the conclusion that it is an accurate star chart, possibly the oldest one in the world. However, it was not a depiction of the night sky observed above Japan.
Okay. I'm not saying it was aliens. A Japanese word for aliens.
Yeah, right. It appears to be centuries out of date from the time the tomb is dated. Right. And it depicts the sky somewhere hundreds of miles to the west. There is debate among researchers as to the date of the chart depicted. Some say between 240 and 520 CE, and others say 120 to 40 BCE. There is also debate as to whether the location of the star chart is somewhere above China or Korea.
That's, you know, that's like Qin Shi Huang, or Shi Huangdi, the first emperor of China, died in 200-something BC, mm-hmm. and his tomb was, it was very elaborate. He's the guy that had the terracotta warriors.
Sure.
And he had like a diorama of the, you know, the imperial city with like rivers of mercury.
That's, yeah.
And like gemstones for stars in the ceiling of the tomb. Oh, and God. I don't know if it was accurate, but clearly they were like, oh yeah, cool, stars. Let's put that up there. Like a
right.
college kid's dorm room.
Or if you were a junior high girl who liked glow-in-the-dark stars.
Okay, all right, fine.
Which
sailor has that?
Oh, which one would have that? Minako. I had that.
So you found, okay, great. So there's an X-Files tomb, but like, what about Hoshi? It means star.
Yes.
There's so many Hoshis.
There are many words for star in the Japanese language. I mean, clearly there has been an interest in stars, but does that chart with astronomy?
Whose tomb was it?
They don't actually know.
Great.
They believe so it was raided sometime before they found it, but they did find like a fancy sword and like, yeah. And, some other things.
It was glowing.
Right. No, it was some sort of like, it was like an important figure. They don't know who it was exactly, right. But an aristocrat of some, oh, yeah, right. Right. Of some sort. And, but they also, the same tomb has paintings of the four directional animals from China.
Right.
It also had that as well.
Okay. So it's Chinese. So when did they finally, I mean, I assume that people, there's Japanese astronomers. So when did they finally discover astronomy?
So Asada Goru is often considered the first astronomer, one of the first astronomers in Japan. And he helped integrate Western and Japanese astronomy during the Edo period. He lives between 1734 and 1799. I'm not exactly sure when he started doing astronomy and integrating that into Japanese cool. astronomy.
Sure.
But I guess one thing you have to keep in mind is because
they got everything from China.
Well, they got everything from China.
Calendar and everything.
Yes. Because they were a closed country for so long, they didn't have a lot of new, like, scientific works available to them.
Galileo? I hardly know him.
Yeah, I know. But okay, all right. Western scientific theory was generally available only through obsolete Chinese works. edited by Jesuit missionaries in China. So that's a couple of different translation
Watch
loops.
Silence.
Yeah, right. Yet Asada managed to construct sophisticated mathematical models of celestial movements and is sometimes credited with the independent discovery of Kepler's third law. Kepler's third law. Asada also studied anatomy in Western texts and and his learnings were incorporated into a compilation by his friend Riken Nakai in Esso Rohitsu in 1773. And apparently the crater Asada on the moon is named after him.
Okay.
So.
All right, now we're getting somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this guy was just like, boy, I'd like to know his story. Historical biopic.
Right.
Right? Well, it starts off. Hey, Asada, come play with this ball. It's like, I don't want to play with the ball. I want to play with those.
I know.
And he points to the sky. He's played by Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I guess he practiced medicine for a living. So that's what he started out doing. But he must have just been fascinated with the stars.
Well, he was apparently a man apart from the rest of Japanese culture, but it seems like things caught on if he, you know, got to do that in the court.
Yeah, I think so. And I do want to also mention there is a festival called Tanabata, which is known as the Star Festival. It's called Hoshi Matsuri in Japanese, and it's a Japanese festival that originated from the Chinese Kyuishi Festival, and it celebrates the meeting of the deities Orihime and Hikoboshi, represented by the stars Vega, the brightest star, and the constellation of, is it Lyra or Lyra?
Lyra.
Lyra. Which is called Koto in Japanese.
Ah.
And I hope I'm pronouncing the star right. Altair, the brightest star in Akila, which is Washi in Japanese. So
isn't a Koto the auto harp thing?
Yes. Yeah, it's an instrument. Yep. According to the legend, the Milky Way separates these lovers and they are allowed to meet only once a year on the seventh day of the seventh lunar month of the lunar solar calendar. The date of Tanabata varies by region of the country, but the first festivities begin on the 7th of July of the Gregorian calendar, and the celebration is held at various times between July and August.
Is this a modern invention, or is this an ancient myth?
Well, it's a myth that came over from China, the festival was introduced in Japan by the Empress Koken in 755.
Right.
And
she was of the something clan, and they were very influential in importing a lot of the Chinese culture directly in.
Right. Yeah. This was the.
They're like, oh, you guys are still doing Japanese stuff? No, yeah. We're doing Chinese stuff. It's pretty cool now. It's pretty cool.
It's originated from the festival to plead for skills, which is called, Kikoden, an alternative name for the Kyuishi, which was celebrated in China and also adopted in the Kyoto Imperial Palace from the Heian period.
please give me the skills. I need the skills.
I know it sounds okay. So in the tale, Orihime is a really talented weaver, and she weaves these beautiful fabrics, and her father is basically like the night sky. And she works so hard on these fabrics that she doesn't have any time to have fun or meet anybody or fall in love. So he...
Millennials.
Right. So he introduces her to...
Match.com.
Hikoboshi, who is the cowherder, and they instantly fall in love. And so they are together and they spend every waking moment together, But her father gets so pissed because she doesn't weave anymore and he doesn't herd his cows anymore. So he separates them with the Milky Way and he's like, you can't be together.
Right.
And she pleads with him, like, please let me see him. So he lets her see her one day out of the year.
And then he stands under her window with a boombox. Yeah, I know this one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So
it's, the story never changes, does it? Stays the same.
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's good. Because I don't know. I consider myself a star enthusiast.
Yeah.
Or I was an amateur astronomer when I was younger. And that's really just like important to me, not only, you know, for the scientific knowledge, but the way that it connects to mythology, which of course is the source of all of our real stories. And so it's the most English lit science you can be into in a lot of ways.
It is.
And so I would hate to think that they were derived of that from so long, but I guess they had it, but it was just like, yeah, it's a Chinese thing.
Right. It came over from China. It wasn't really their own. Yeah, I mean, they made it their own. Like, I know.
Weapons and, metalworking.
Know.
And,
I know.
But they're just like, well, we'll worry about that one later.
I know. But in present day Japan, it's celebrated by writing wishes, sometimes in the form of poetry on tanzaku, which are small pieces of paper, and hanging them on a bamboo tree, sometimes with other decorations. So it kind of, people used to wish for skills, like, I want to be a skilled weaver, like Orihime.
I want to be a cow herder.
Right? Yeah. I mean, other skills besides the skills that they had.
There's just two.
Just the two.
You just got, whichever one.
Right.
You like being outside, or you don't mind sitting down for a long time.
Right, exactly. So, so there's that. In 1782, an official astronomer was first appointed by the shogun at Asakusa Observatory. An observatory was later built for students at the University of Tokyo, and the Tokyo Astronomical Observatory was established in 1888 with the goal to institute latitude and longitude and keep the accurate date and time by observing the stars.
Sure, that's your calendar becomes more accurate. So it's like a lot of things that the Japanese have been introduced to later on. Like, they immediately picked it up and ran with it.
More or less, yeah.
And I would think that, I don't know, maybe not. There's a lot of telescopes in Hawaii because it's isolated from the mainland.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Oh, okay. I'll let you get to it. But like mountains plus telescope equals good.
Yes. Yeah. Thumbs up. Absolutely. Because you're closer. Well, yeah. For one thing, but also isolated.
You are a little bit closer to Altair. But it's more the thinness of the atmosphere.
Yeah, fair enough. Not as much cloud coverage. Today, Japanese astronomers are making valuable contributions to the science of astronomy. The National Astronomical Observatory of Japan, or NAOJ, is an astronomical research organization comprising of several facilities in Japan, as well as an observatory in Hawaii and Chile. It was established in 1988. As an amalgamation of three existing research organizations, the Tokyo Astronomical Observatory of the University of Tokyo, International Latitude Observatory of Mizusawa, and a part of Research Institute of Atmospherics of Nagoya University. In 2006, Dr. Mansori Iie discovered at the time the most distant galaxy found that gave scientists a picture of the universe as it appeared nearly 12.9 billion years ago. In 2012, he discovered a galaxy that was even more far away. Iie's findings came by creating narrowband filters to detect Lyman alpha photons from galaxies far, far away.
What?
I did that.
Did they see Chewbacca?
Yeah.
Did they see him?
Yeah, exactly. Utilizing these filters with Japan's Subaru telescope in Hawaii, EA's team completed a detailed survey of primordial galaxies. The team's finding that galaxy density decreases significantly between 12.8 billion and 12.9 billion years ago, identifying the beginning of the cosmic dawn.
The expansion.
Yes. Secured EA the 2013 Japan Academy Prize.
Nice.
Yes, which is awarded to an academic.
In Japan?
In Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not an international prize.
This year we won it.
Yeah.
Last year we gave it to a German guy, but, you know, it's good to take it back home again.
Okay. All right. The Subaru telescope is...
It fits six comfortably.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You had to get it in there. I know. Is the 8.2 meter or 320 inch flagship telescope of the National Astronomical Observatory of Japan, located at the Mauna Kea Observatory of Hawaii. It is named after the open star cluster known in English as the Pleiades.
Pleiades,
a.k.a. the Seven Sisters, which is part of the Taurus constellation. Subaru means to govern or gather together.
Get great gas mileage.
Well, apparently it was named that because it was like a combination of like five or six companies that came together.
Oh,
so that's why they, and that's why their symbol, if you look at it, it's evolved over the years. I think now it's like one visible star and then the rest is like blue. But
I can't wait till the girls start driving and we talk about cars.
I know, right? But that's why they went with that. And the telescope has the largest monolithic primary mirror in the world from its commissioning until 2005. So it's been surpassed. But and I also wanted to talk a little bit about their science program. The Hayabusa, which means peregrine falcon in Japanese. Yeah. So there have been two of these. The first one was a robotic spacecraft developed by Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, or JAXA, J-A-X-A. And it was developed to return a sample of material from a small near-Earth asteroid named 25143 Itokawa to Earth for further analysis.
Yeah.
And even though other spacecraft have, you know, basically been launched to to study asteroids and everything, this is the first one that was...
it's taken some back.
Yeah, it's taken some back to Earth to be studied. So that's a really huge thing.
They're like... It's rocks. Okay, we got it, everybody.
I know.
That's 800 million yen well spent.
I know. And there's a Hayabusa 2 that actually just recently came back to Earth with some samples in December 2020, so just recently. And its mission has now been extended through at least 2031. When it will rendezvous with the 1998 KY asteroid.
It's a slippery asteroid. Hard to catch.
Yeah. So, again, getting samples of asteroids. And I just touched, too, on, like, all the experiments that NAOJ is doing right now. They have, like... a supercomputer that runs like mathematical like programs of like simulations of like what did the solar system look like billions of years ago, that sort of thing. Lots of really neat,
it was dead.
Cool stuff. Yeah.
Nothing was open.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's too early.
So
they also had little rovers.
Yeah.
That they drove on it.
I know.
So it's just like, that's why, like, if they had just... If that Chinese lady, the Empress, had just gotten more serious about, like, getting these people to look at the stars, then who knows? We'd be living on the moon, Crystal Tokyo, right
now.
Yeah,
yeah.
Thanks to the Japanese, but they're catching up.
They are, Crystal Tokyo-wise, so. Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? Prince Demando, again, has a glass of red wine, which he doesn't drink, again. Although it almost looks more like a bright pink.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a rosé.
Well,
switching it up a little bit.
Yeah, or a table wine, a Chianti or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't look like a very strong vintage, but you have to communicate that it's wine. Otherwise, people are like, why is he drinking motor oil? You know, it has to look very bright and red so we know what it is. But,
yeah, exactly. Villain gauge, where you rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. So I do not recall anyone saying the droid's name within the episode itself. But when I looked it up, his name is
Randy.
No, Jakoku or Jakoku, depending on two different sources. So either J A K O K U or J A A K O K K U. I'm just gonna call him Creepy Scythe Man, or what did you call him again?
Clokey.
Clokey. We'll just go with Clokey.
Clokey.
Yeah. So the meaning behind his name, Jakoku, it literally means evil black. The J-A-K-O-K-U spelling.
Uh-huh.
His name is also a reference to his original manifestation, the evil black crystal, or Jakoku Suisho. He is based on the Grim Reaper. Like, yeah, we get that. but that was a fact that I found. his design, I mean, it's basically like the Grim Reaper, more or less, kind of like a stylized version of that. But he has white skin, slanty, glowing red eyes, long red fingernails, and a large purple hooded cloak. No lower half of his body. So that's cool. The cloak...
Save money on pants.
Yeah, right. The cloak also covers the lower half of his face like a mask. And there is a gold metal smile over the mask, like a menacing mouth. It also reminded me of a Menpo or a samurai mask. You don't think so?
I was trying to make heads or tails of his whole design, because he's got the, like you said, he's got the slit eyes in the mask that is presumably, it's not like a domino mask, but it's over his eye area. But yeah, but then he's got nothing else. And then he's got that weird... handlebar that just kind of comes out.
Mm-hmm. It looks like a creepy smile, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. I wouldn't be surprised if this, if there's some connection to costume, some the No Theater or historical dress or something like that. Do you know what I mean? They don't make these decisions without a reason, but I couldn't find anything.
I couldn't either. I mean, I think a lot of the no mask, that's why I said a samurai mask, just because it you know, that ornate, you know.
Don't the, like a kitsune masks, like fox masks have like eyes like that sometimes?
Oh, I didn't even think to look at the eyes. I was so fixated on the gold part. yeah, I think that they do have slanted eyes a lot of the time. That's how they're depicted in art anyways. They did actually historically think that if somebody was afflicted with some sort of mental illness, they thought that they were possessed by a kitsune.
Right.
And
now I'm looking at it now, and it's even got, I don't know what this is, but it's got like a lip that goes out in front of the eyes that is almost like a muzzle. And then there's a little jewel at the tip, but that could be kind of the shape of a nose. So now it's starting to look to me like, and the thing curls up like maybe like tusks or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It does curl up.
It has a couple different like animal aspects.
It does. Yeah. I know. I couldn't quite put my finger on it though.
Cool. Well, yeah. It's dead now, so.
This is a talking bad guy episode. We haven't had one of those in a long time. Like, he speaks in full sentences. He does have some good lines, too. I like when he says, "Impudent little brats, die," or, "Ooh, this sounds like fun," when the girls say that they're enemies now, and "I will pitch you out of your misery now." So, you know, I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I felt like the things that he said were confusing because, like I said before, I know this is just a dream. I know that I guess he is real. Nothing in it is real, but he's real for some reason.
And they're
in
real.
Her mind. And they're real. They're there too.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you die in Chibi's head, you die in real life. He didn't seem like he was really pursuing it. He was playing a game. He calls it a game.
Yes.
And then I don't know if Chibi was also imprisoned, because they seem to. It's important that they keep, you know, her mom imprisoned while they're doing their nefarious things or destroying Tokyo or whatever. So I don't know if it's like, you know, they need her for their plan too. But it's okay to torture her or to season the meat a little bit by chasing her around.
Yeah, right. No hurry to actually capture or kill her.
Yeah, and a cat will do that with a mouse. Now, the cat fully intends to kill that mouse and possibly consume it, but, you know, we'll see later.
Right.
But it will take its time. And so I'm not saying he wasn't, like, he didn't actually plan to kill her, but he's definitely just taking his time.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about this one. Like, I think he's, he's a pretty powerful bad guy. I feel like his design is very much like the Grim Reaper, but also different. I'm not entirely sure if I want to give him a high rating or not, but he is he's fairly effective when you think about it. He knocks them all out, and he almost defeats Sailor Moon. Yeah, I kind of want to give him a 3 out of 5 dark stars, but I kind of feel like maybe I should actually give him a 4. So I think I'm going to give him a 4.
Okay, I'm gonna give him a 3.
Oh, okay.
Just because he's just a little too confusing. If this was a repeating villain, if this is a guy that we would see again or would be unmasked, and it's like, oh my god, you know, it's you,
right,
Milton Berle. Then there'd be more meat here, but it's like he's enticing, but you know, we know that there's no real, payoff. And in an episode that is, I think for the most part, you know, is designed to and successfully entice it, tells you things while enticing you for more things. He's just sort of there to be an antagonist and is kind of confusing and doesn't really fill out our knowledge about like the Black Moon Clan.
Right.
Or anything like that.
No, I agree. We don't really learn anything new from him, except that he's the evil Black Crystal.
Right. Is he like an avatar of the evil Black Crystal?
I don't know. I mean,
because the other droids were presumably programmed or maintained by the sisters, and they could argue with the sisters and question their orders and things like that.
Right.
But, you know, he's got a crystal inside of him like the crystal. So I wonder if he's just, you know, a drone, basically, like being operated by the crystal.
It's unclear to me. And I was thinking, like, do you think that, like, the shape of the crystal, like, depicts, like, kind of like the shape of his cloak? No, not
the earrings.
Really.
It's the earrings.
Well, yeah, right. It's the same shape as the earrings, right?
Yeah.
I thought that we would also talk briefly about Saphir, the new Black Clan member that we see for the first time in this episode.
Okay.
So his name, Saphir, comes from the Middle English and the Old French term Saphir, spelled the same way, which comes from the Latin terms Saphir, it's S-A-P-P-H-I-R, S-A-P-P-I-R, or Saphiris. Which comes from the ancient Greek term Saphirios, which is precious stone or gem. And it goes way, way, way back, but it could possibly be traced back to the Sanskrit term Sampriya, which means dark-colored stone, literally dear to Saturn. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It also comes from the Hebrew term sapir, which could refer, all of these terms could refer to sapphire, but the Hebrew term could also refer to lapis lazuli. So it's a blue stone.
Or a jacket.
But in the dub, Saphir's name is changed to Sapphire. So not surprising there. And now we are up to our rating. I like that we meet Sailor Pluto, who we didn't really get to talk about a whole lot on this episode. And I apologize about that. Maybe we can talk about her a little bit more next episode. But I like that we meet Sailor Pluto, kind of. I also know that Usagi is dramatic, but I actually think that it is sweet that she is so visibly upset that Chibiusa is not feeling well. It shows how much she has grown to care about her. And I also really like Sailor Moon and Chibiusa's scenes with each other in this episode. I think that they really show how much Usagi has matured. And now that she's thinking so strongly about protecting Chibiusa, she seems braver and more determined. Due largely to this character growth, I'm actually going to give this episode 4 out of 5 roses.
Okay. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 just because it's solid. It's got good parts. It's got bad parts. Obviously, we're introducing a new sailor, but barely. I feel like I don't know anything about her at all.
I know.
And I know that we need to have episodes like this, but I don't like the fact that it doesn't really follow up from the week before. You know, this is definitely an oxbow in the storyline here. But at the same time, we're seeing levels of heroism that are off the charts from our girls here. And I also like the fact that they don't even hesitate to, you know, Pluto's like, if you die in Chibi's head, you can die in real life. And they're like, well, we're going to do it. We don't care. We're all going to do it. Let's get in there and save her. So I admire them for that. So, yeah, I mean, solid.
Mm-hmm.
Four is higher than solid, I guess. But but yeah, it's a strong four.
It is. My English title is Chibiusa's Nightmare, Deathly Loneliness.
See, solid. That's what I'm talking about. That's a 4 out of 5 title right there. my Deke title is Sickle and Tired.
Oh, come on.
Mama!
Next episode, we are talking about episode number 76. Ankoku no Marioku, Esmeraldo no Shinraku in Japanese. Magic of Darkness, Esmeralda's Invasion, the English translation, and the English title, Emerald Takes Over.
Emerald is here to stay.
Emerald City?
Emerald City. Yeah. Oh, I'm giving away my titles for next week. Gotta tamp that down. Stave it off.
So, Cal, I was thinking that you could tell us what you think would be coming up in the future on the show.
Funny word, the future. Because that's where I think we're going. Did I used to like these? I don't even remember
I
anymore.
Now
I feel like I hate them because there's just more and more things like pink telekinesis power to try to factor in.
Kyle.
But yeah, mind bullets. but here's what I thought. I think the sailors are going to go to the future for real. I mean, I'm sure they'll get attacked at a pie eating contest or whatever's going to happen on the next episode. But the final confrontation has to be in the future. And maybe the bad guys will get their hands on the crystal or on Chibi or both. And the sailors will have to use the key or Luna P or something to get to the future to get them back. Mm-hmm. Like the whole point is like all they need to do is just see. There's the thing. I don't know if they're trying to like rewrite time because it seems like Crystal Tokyo is destroyed. Like, can we Back to the Future this and bring it back? Or are we just trying to stop, you know, the reign of the Black Moon Clan so we can rebuild and move on? Like, they don't even know what they're supposed to do.
They don't know. Yeah.
So maybe we can just go to little baby Demando and,
oh, no!
And just take care of that, right?
Oh, my God.
But I think that whether or not they, our girls never know what's going on. Even though they could probably stop this in the past if they kill enough Black Moon Clan people that come back to the past, I think they will end up in the future dealing with this.
Okay.
All right. We need to make big swings. No pussyfooting around. So here we are. Chibiusa, or the small lady, is the daughter of Usagi and Mamoru in the future. Usagi is the mom or the princess. Tuxedo Mask is the tuxedo mauve guy we see in the intro. Are they the rulers of Crystal Tokyo? I don't know. It could be a Miracle Man scenario like I posited before.
Mm.
Maybe they're just so cool that everybody wants them to rule Tokyo. I don't know. It also seems like there's a quick turnaround on this. It's not like they've got crow's feet in the future. So unless they're ageless or their descendants are reproducing in a Game of Thrones scenario, we turn Tokyo from crosswalks and Akihabara into Crystal Tokyo pretty fast. Maybe that's the power of the moon. I don't know. What else? Bad guys. Maybe we can turn Esmeralda and Saphir good, like they do with the Ayakashi, but I don't know about that, but a guy with a name like Demando, that guy's going to die probably. Unless he's willing to change his name.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Ayakashi sisters, I would love to see them again.
Yes.
And I was thinking that we're talking time travel, right?
Yes.
So there's a chance that just about anything can happen if we're playing with time travel. So maybe they could go to the future and they could go at a different time, like earlier than the destruction of Crystal Tokyo. And they could run into younger versions of the Ayakashi or older versions of themselves, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does.
Maybe they could go back in time and reinforce the guardrail on that mountain road that Mamoru's parents just drove
off.
Oh
my God. No, that's part of the fixed timeline that has to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. It's what are we talking about? How powerful is this key? You know?
Right.
Let's find that Hitler guy.
Oh my gosh.
Let's give him the moon princess elation. Other than just making random predictions, Luna's gonna get into surfing or something like that. That's all the story sort of predictions I can think of.
Kitty surfing. That's adorable. Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's a lot. There's a lot of predictions. I think some good ones. So yeah.
I can't wait for episode 100 or whatever the next one is.
Like the end of this arc? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, whenever we have to do this again.
Oh.
I think
okay.
This is just a good natural place to do it, just both in terms of the episode number and also the kind of break in the storyline. But the next time we hit this, it'll be like, Ami gets stage 4 cancer.
Oh my goodness, no!
Makoto moves to Antarctica. and Rei gets defrocked.
What?
As a priest. As a priestess.
Okay. All right. I was like, what do you mean?
If you really want to talk about the future, we should talk about next week, which we will be off for because we've reached a point of pause, I think. Mm-hmm. So we'll be back the week after next for episode 76 and the Emerald City Blues or whatever
Emerald
it is.
Emerald takes over.
Yeah. In the meantime, though, there's always plenty of animedification shows, and coming up very soon are PGSM.
Yes.
Or so PGSN.
PGSN.
For Pretty Guardian Sailor Noobs.
Yes. Yes. We should
have. You can be the Guardian.
Oh.
I'll be pretty.
Okay. That sounds good.
So we'll see you then. But in the meantime, you can always join us on social media or on our Discord to talk about Sailor Moon and other geek stuff. You think when the word geek was invented, the Greeks were like, oh, come on, come on.
It's one letter off.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, come on. This is...
Did not appreciate that.
Yeah. We have Greek columns. Oh, now you've got geek columns. Oh, hilarious.
We got the Greek squad. Oh, now you got the geek squad.
Yeah, I heard Greek squad. I got excited. It was Greek squad.
Well, that's our show for this week. In the Name of the Moon, we'll be punishing you in 2 weeks with another episode of Sailor Noob.
Evil!